Radio Prague News.
Foreign Minister Karl Schwarzenberg has offered his condolences to the new Prime Minister of Greece. President Václav Klaus received controversial British MEP Nigel Farage at Prague Castle on Monday. And American actress Susan Sarandon will be one of the special guests at this year's Carlo Vivari International Film Festival. Foreign Minister Karl Schwarzenberg told the press on Monday he would be keeping his fingers crossed for the new Prime Minister of Greece, who he said would not have an easy job to do. Responding to the results of repeated early elections in the indebted country, Mr. Schwarzenberg told the Czech press agency that he should rather offer his condolences. The chairman of the winning Conservative Party, New Democracy, met with the Greek president on Monday and agreed that a governing coalition must be established as soon as possible. President Václav Klaus received controversial British MEP Nigel Farage at Prague Castle on Monday. The noted Eurosceptic and head of the UK Independence Party was invited to Prague by the Conservative Association DOST, which allies itself with President Klaus on many issues. Speaking after their meeting, Mr. Farage praised Klaus as the sole European head of state who takes a deeply Eurosceptic stance. He said their discussion centered on their concerns that Europe uses every crisis as a pretext to take away another piece of democracy from its members. An exhibition covering the history of the social and sports organization Sokol opened on Monday to mark exactly 130 years since the organization's first meeting in Prague. The Military Museum in Prague's Žižkov district will be hosting some 500 exhibits showing legendary members, the organization's role in wartime, and Olympic medals won. The exhibition will be open until the end of the year. The Sokol movement was founded in 1862 and, beyond its athletic output, played an important role in Czech nationalism and cultural awareness in the 19th century. Academy Award-winning actress Susan Sarandon will be one of the special guests at this year's Carlo Vivari International Film Festival. Both Sarandon and British actress Helen Mirren, who also won a Best Actress Oscar for her title role in The Queen, will receive Lifetime Achievement Awards at the festival. This year's 47th Carlo Vivari Festival will run from June 29th to July 7th and will be opened by Sarandon and concluded by Mirren. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions should be mostly clear with scattered showers or storms in the evening and daytime highs around 32 degrees Celsius. My name's Christian Falvey. That's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. I'm Jan Richter. Coming up in today's show, there is cautious optimism in Prague about the outcome of Greece's elections. Then Czechs sensationally win their group at Euro 2012 and advance to the tournament's quarterfinals. And later in a new edition of One on One, we talk to Czech mountain biker Jan Kopka. All that and more coming up, so please stay with us. The Czech crown firmed upon the news of the election victory of pro-EU parties in Greece, and all the day's papers commented on Europe's palpable sigh of relief. Although not a Eurozone member, the Czech Republic has nevertheless watched the Greek drama unfold with considerable concern. Daniela Lazarová has the story.
Although Prime Minister Petr Nečas' warning that Czechs might have to brace for the repercussions of a Greek exit from the Eurozone no longer seems an imminent threat, political analysts are watching developments with cautious optimism. Mihai Mestrík from the government's advisory council says that accepting Europe's tough bailout conditions for fear of being shown the door is one thing, but delivering on those promises in the long term is another.
If you look into the problems actually the Greece is facing, that's something which goes beyond just those elections. Of course, I can imagine that this can be a step forward because functioning government in Greece is a crucial point. But at the same time, there will be more challenges. The problems of many Greeks is the fact that they are still not ready to realize the fact that there is a overconsumption, that there is something which is should be cut, and these are the challenges for the new government. which were supported by the significant portion of the population, but this is not the whole population, and this is still the risk.
The Eurosceptic Czech President Václav Klaus has poured scorn on the idea that a pro-EU victory in Greece could help the Eurozone resolve its debt problems. In an interview for Czech Radio, Mr. Klaus noted that Greece had not precipitated the Eurozone crisis. Greece was its victim. The President said there was no good solution to the Eurozone crisis since the Eurozone as such was not a viable project. Although the centre-right Czech government is visibly more moderate in its pronouncements, the country has taken a cautious wait-and-see approach regarding the future of the Eurozone and its own role in it. Although the government approved a €1.5 billion loan to the IMF earlier this year, the Czechs have opted to stay out of the emerging fiscal union. This Friday, Prime Minister Petr Nečas is to host a summit of heads of government of the Visegrad Four, Hungary, Poland, Slovakia and the Czech Republic, of which only Slovakia has adopted the euro, to consult their positions ahead of the upcoming EU summit on June 28th. At the summit, the bloc's leaders are expected to try to develop a roadmap towards fiscal union and try to get on board as many members as possible in order to secure greater fiscal stability. According to Michal Mejstřík, the Czech government will maintain its negative stance to a formal commitment, stating that it should be enough for it to fulfill the conditions of the deal.
Many countries which declared to join EU fiscal compact are not delivering homework at home. So I can only say that the primary requirement for the Czech government is to deliver what would be otherwise required by fiscal compact, and that this is the best contribution which can strengthen also the position of the Czech Republic in the future negotiation within EU27.
It should be said that the government's reserved stand reflects the views of the general public. In March of this year, Czech confidence in the European Union hit an all-time low, with fewer than one in two Czechs now trusting the respective institutions. According to the Mediafax agency, two out of three Czechs appreciate the government's decision not to set a target for EU adoption during its term in office.
Daniela Lazarová with that report. Coming up next, the Czech Republic's national football team defeated Euro 2012 co-hosts Poland in their last group stage game on Saturday to surprisingly emerge as winners of Group A. After a disappointing start to the tournament against Russia, the Czech team gained momentum and beat both Greece and Poland, advancing to the quarterfinals where they'll play Portugal on Thursday. However, the injured Czech captain Tomáš Rosický's participation in the game is uncertain. It was an all-out game between the Czech Republic and Poland in Wroclaw on Saturday. The Poles needed to win to avoid an early end at the Euro 2012 tournament, while the Czechs, under certain circumstances, could do with a tie. The tournament co-host Poles had an amazing start and were very close to scoring as the Czech defense barely managed to stop Polish attacks. The Czechs, with Daniel Kolář instead of injured playmaker Tomáš Rosický, were moreover quite clueless in attack, where their long passes more often than not failed to find the lone striker Milan Baroš. But the Czechs survived the first half without conceding a goal and gradually came to dominate the play in the second half. The decision came with some 20 minutes to go when defender Tomáš Hipšman won the ball and sent Milan Baroš onto the break. Baroš kept the ball before passing it to Petr Jiráček, who cut inside and found the net beyond the Polish goalkeeper.
It was a great pass from Tomáš Hipšman. I just received the ball and found myself alone in front of the goalkeeper. I wanted to place it near the further post, which I did. The goalie touched the ball, but fortunately it went in. I needed a moment like this, and I'm glad I was able to help the team.
The desperate Poles made some last-minute efforts to equalize, and their biggest opportunity came in the last minute of overtime. But Michal Kadlec cleared off the shot by Poland's Jakub Blaszczykowski to save the win for the Czechs. Czech goalkeeper Petr Čech said he believed the shot was not a real threat anyway.
It went wide, I think. It went wide because when I turned back, I saw the ball going wide, and I really believe that that it was wide. But then obviously we cleared it, and we did well.
Team captain Tomáš Rosický, whose absence due to a foot injury was notable mainly in the first half, said the Czechs learned a lot from Euro qualifying when the team played with no margin for error.
Maybe the hard weight what we took in the qualification paid off for us because, as you could see, for example, today. In the second half, we stayed very calm and we are there and we are very happy.
Saturday's win was the second victory for the Czechs, who stunned Greece in their second group stage appearance at Euro 2012 on Tuesday, when Petr Jiráček scored in the third minute, equaling the mark for the third fastest goal at European Championships. The victory against Poland also seems to have reconciled the demanding Czech fans with their team, especially with striker Milan Baroš and manager Michal Bílek, both of whom were jeered in the previous games. Milan Baroš had this to say.
I would just like to say one thing. I want to thank all of those who believed in us throughout the qualification and this tournament and did not turn their backs on us. This victory belongs to those very few who believed in us, and I thank them for it.
On Thursday, the Czechs will face Portugal for a spot in the tournament semifinals. But Czech team captain Tomáš Rosický's participation in the game is uncertain. On Sunday, the Arsenal midfielder left for Prague to receive treatment of his injured Achilles tendon. Rosický should rejoin the national side on Tuesday, which is also when the team managers should know whether he'll play or not. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up next, Jan Wellinger talks to the Czech mountain biker Jan Kopka in this edition of One on One. In today's One on One, I talk to Jan Kopka, a well-known Czech mountain biker who specializes in extreme or adventure racing. His first major competition years ago was the Crocodile Trophy in Australia. Later, Kopka won the Iditarod Invitational, an MTB race held in winter across Alaska. In today's interview, those races, as well as one across Czechoslovakia, are discussed. If you want to find out what it feels like to cross the finish line after pedaling hundreds of kilometers, stay with us. Jan begins by talking about how he discovered adventure racing in the first place.
In that time, I already did biking 20 years, 10 years on the road cycling, and next 10 years mountain biking. And all races was almost same, boring. And I started to look for other races, for something what would bring me something new. I found races in nature in different parts of world, and usually it was without people, no civilization there, and usually they were transcontinental races, self-supported races. So it was big challenge for me to try it.
It strikes me that this kind of challenge, where you are really dependent on yourself, that it's very different than a regular race where you're just competing against other people on their bikes, other racers. Here, you're not only fighting the person beside you, but you're also have to sort of overcome your own fears and limits. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. It is. Maybe in hardest races, the other competitors are not important. Important is just you. Your physical and mental preparation or mental strength are the most important factors.
And what was your first extreme race?
The first extreme race I did in 1996, it was Dolomit Man. This race is considered extreme race, but from my today point of view, it wasn't extreme. It was just different race from others. Really, the first extreme race was Crocodile Trophy. It was a race across Australia, and it was through interior of Australia, a lot of deserts and bushes and really tough nature.
I've seen many documentaries, and it seems almost insurmountable to take part in such a challenge. How many kilometers was that race, and what were some of the dangers? Because it's not just the heat, it's also, I suppose, poisonous spiders and that kind of thing.
Yeah. The race was more than 2,000 kilometers long, and it was a little different. It was like Paris-Dakar in cars. We had stages and very primitive camps at the end of each stage. The average length of stage was 170 kilometers. It's a lot in climate like is in Australia. You said also spiders and snakes, and it's really another danger, not only on bike, but when you are camping between stages. Australia is a very poisoned country. The 12 most poisoned snakes live in Australia, so it was another danger.
How did you do in that competition?
I finished fourth. It was a surprise for many people, also for bikers, because in this race were also professional bikers, and I was in that time older, and older means 37 years old, and I did biking in that time like hobby, like amateur, like hobby rider, and so among professional riders I finished fourth.
So was it at that point that you realized that, okay, extreme sport is something that I not only really enjoy, but this is something that I can do well?
Yeah. The first race was very, very hard because it was first, and I didn't know. After this race, I was very, very tired and mentally and physically. But I realized, even during this race, I realized that it's just what I were looking for, what I wanted to do. It was not only about racing, but also every race like this brings me a lot of new knowledges, interesting people, and you can meet local culture, local people, and you can meet their philosophy, and you can see how hard they live. And it isn't only about racing, but also about new knowledge.
On the one hand, you did this race in Australia, and then you also took part in Iditarod. Now, many people know that that is a famous musher race with huskies, but there's also a mountain bike equivalent, and in 2007 you actually won this race. Do you think that this race in particular deserves the title of being the toughest man-powered race in the world?
Yeah, sure. After Australia I started to look for a different extreme races in different parts of the world and in different climates, and in Australia is probably hottest extreme race, and I tried to find a coldest race in the world, and I wanted to try. I knew that my body can work in very hot weather with problems, but I didn't know how my body can work in very freezing weather. And so I found a race across Alaska, Iditarod, and I prepared for it long time. Mentally, I prepared 2.5 years for it, and physically, it's easy. It was a couple of months, but mentally, it was hard.
What was the toughest moment for you in that competition?
When I was on Bering Sea, it catch me blizzard, and wind was almost 90 kilometers per hour, and it was flat, and you cannot bivvy, you cannot hit anywhere, you can just to continue in so bad weather. You can't see because snow is flying around, and you have just to go against so strong wind, and I didn't believe that I can get from there.
What you're saying reminds me of a moment that was described once in a book by John Krakauer, the mountain climber, where disaster strikes, or the potential for disaster is certainly there. And he, if I were to paraphrase it, described a kind of singular motivation or focus that you have to have at that moment as a sports person just to keep going. Was that the same for you?
Yeah. And especially here in Alaska, you just have to keep going. We had minus 40 degrees Celsius 1 week. For us, it's very deep temperature.
How did you feel when you won it?
It was interesting because the whole race, I was looking forward, very much looking forward to catch finish. And when I was there, I was sad because I knew that the big adventure finished, that next days will be boring. Next days will bring me nothing. So it was interesting. I was surprised that I feel that in finish. I was lucky, sure. I was lucky that I survived. But I felt that I would like to turn around to go across Alaska back to start.
As a competitor, do you still train as hard as you did before? Do you still compete in races, or has your role changed? I asked because this year, in a couple of weeks' time, we're going to see the second inception of a race that you founded here in the Czech Republic.
I would like to train same as I was a competitor, but it's impossible. Till 2010, I did races. My last race was in Mongolia in 2010, and I was still training a lot. But next year, I organized the first issue of race across Czechoslovakia, and it took me so much time that I have no time for training as I had before.
Nevertheless, you see the results of your work in a different manner. You've put together this race. New, younger racers today are taking part, and I imagine that you see much of the same enthusiasm and drive that you know very well.
Yeah. When I saw competitors, when I saw the people at the finish of the race, I was lucky that I did it, because they felt exactly same what I felt in big race or in big races in the world, and they did it at home. They could do it at home.
So you're saying that was a very satisfying experience for you?
Yeah, it was really, it was satisfying, and that's why I decided to do a second issue of this race. And last year it was from Slovakia, from eastest village in Slovakia to the west of Czech Republic. And this year the trail goes opposite, from the most west part of Czech Republic to most east village in Slovakia.
Now, you are based in Jablonec. Have the Jizera Mountains played a big role in your career?
I think Jizera Mountains play the main role in my life, because I like it, and when I need train, I go there and I train there. When I need rest, I go there and I have a rest there. I am alone in beautiful nature, and I try to charge my batteries. And the mountains brings me all. It's the most beautiful gym in the world.
Mountain biker Jan Kopka was Jan Wellinger's guest in that edition of One on One. We now round up our regular weekday program with our popular miniseries ABC of Czech by Pavla Horáková.
Welcome to the ABC of Czech and its current culinary series. Today I'm joined by
Daniela Lazarová,
and we look at pasta in Czech cuisine. If you have so far associated pasta only with Italy, today you have a chance to find out about homegrown Czech pasta,
těstoviny.
First of all, one should try to avoid using the word pasta in Czech restaurants, because the waiter might bring you toothpaste instead. As we already said, the general word is
těstoviny,
which comes from the word
těsto,
meaning dough. Even before the market here was flooded with real Italian products, people could buy Czech versions of it, complete with Czech names. Forget about fusilli or rotini. They are traditionally known as
vřetínka,
or little spindles in Czech. No one knows about konkylie, but everybody likes
mušličky,
little mussels. One of the most widely available shapes of pasta in the past decades were elbow macaroni, or
kolinka,
meaning little knees rather than elbows. The type of pasta, known worldwide as penne, is commonly called
sekané potrubí,
or chopped pipes in this country. Rosa Marina was always sold under the name
těstovinová rýže,
or pasta rice. Most of these types of pasta were eaten as a side dish in the past decades, rather than a meal in its own right. On to soup pasta. Stele are
hvězdičky,
or little stars. Alphabets are
písmenka,
or little letters. And letter soup,
písmenková polévka,
is certainly very popular with kids. With some types of pasta, Czechs just mispronounce the name to better suit their mouths. For example, spaghetti becomes
špagety,
and macaroni becomes
macaroni.
But there are types of pasta that seem to have always been prepared in this country. One is ordinary noodles, or
nudle.
Short and thin noodles are used to thicken meat or vegetable broths. Thicker versions are eaten with ground poppy seeds, sugar and butter.
Nudle s mákem.
I remember my grandmother rolling out the dough, cutting the noodles and then drying them. Cut into little squares, they are called
fleky,
or
flíčky.
They are used either as soup pasta or to make a typical Czech meal known as
šunkofleky.
It is made of cubed smoked meat, cooked fleky and eggs, and it's all baked in an oven. And finally, there are
noki,
little dumplings made of flour and eggs that are eaten with meat or in clear soups. Although the name sounds similar to the Italian gnocchi, the Czech term comes directly from German. We should also mention the Slovak potato dumplings,
halušky,
which are even more similar to gnocchi and are usually eaten with bacon and Slovak sheep cheese. But now we're out of time. Thanks for joining us. Until next time.
Dobrou chuť.
Bon appétit.
That edition of ABC of Czech by Pavla Horáková was the final part of our English language program for today. We, as always, love to hear from you, so if you're out there and if you have any comments or questions for us, do get in touch. You can write us a letter to Vinohradská 12 12099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic, or send an email to english@radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.